Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. What a bombbuster of a week, huh? Zillions of things going on. But you know, of the zillion, 999.999.999 quadrillion aren't being told to you by the press. I mean, they're just full of lies, innuendos, made-up stories, the whole nine yards. We're going to get into that. We got a bunch of stuff to cover this morning. A bunch of stuff. I'm going to start off with a couple of great stories. A driver's license story from New Mexico, which is like right in line with this little series of stories I've given you over the mindless, the non-think of bureaucracies. What it costs us in time and money, what it costs them in time and money. In the case of the government, them is us. We're going to talk about Comey. It's going to be brief. You've heard a million things, you're sick of it, but there's a couple things I want to point out in his testimony and the testimony the day before by McCabe that really nobody has focused on, and give you just the bullet point takeaways on this. And we're going to talk about Hillary, because Hillary is under investigation again. Boy, haven't heard anything about that from the mainstream media, have you? Let me bring you up to speed on that, because it corroborates what I told you when that special counsel was appointed. The Democrats are going to rue the day they asked for special counsel. And We're going to talk a little bit about the rhinos, you know, a little conference that's going on in Utah this weekend. Unbelievable. A little bit about Trump's regulation deconstruction. Love it. We're going to talk a little bit about oil, because the oil companies are going nuts. I'm going to tell you about that. Most of all, we're going to talk about, and this is really important in the wake of the three terror attacks in London, the probable terror attack. We don't have the final analysis yet, but they're withholding the names of the perps who in that pickup truck ran down two police officers in Washington, D.C. I'm not even sure you've heard about it on most of the media outlets. But you know, whenever they withhold the names, you remember San Bernardino, you remember the Pulse nightclub attack in Florida. When they withhold the names, it's because of a reason. And the reason is, I would bet you the names are Arabic. We shall see. The most important thing I want to bring to you today, because nobody's talking about it, I'm going to connect a bunch of dots for you. I have long told you, 2 years ago, go back and I tell you all the time, listen to that show, Unholy Alliance, the alt-left and radical Islam. And the spin machine of radical Islam is the same spin machine, slightly different talking points, that the alt-left uses, which ties right into Comey's testimony and him blasting the mainstream media, the New York Times, WAPO, you name it, for a bunch of false stories. Basically what he said was they've been reporting lies. And you know what? They know it. Just like the Islamists know when they do their spin on terror and Islam, they know it. And I got some fascinating stuff to go over with you today on that, which is going to include that NSA leaker that got caught, some of the things that you have not been told about her. It's going to talk about a raid on the Dearborn residence of Uma Abedin's brother. can't find that anywhere, can you? And then it was hardly covered at all, but Susan Rice on lying Susan Rice on TV talking about terror. And I'm gonna tell you a little bit about one of the attackers and his father and the spin that the father's mosque is putting it on in Britain from the London attacks. Excuse me, from the Manchester suicide bombing. I think you'll find it fascinating. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about next week's show at the end, too, which is going to include pensions, which are in dire trouble. I've been warning about this for years. States that are going broke, etc. So, without further ado, let me get started. First of all, I'm going to tell you the story of an elderly lady in New Mexico. This is an email I got. Because she listens to the show, and she had heard my little beginning stories of bureaucracy with this insurance company and some other things over the last few weeks, which are quite entertaining, unless you're on the other side. They're quite entertaining. And she wrote me an email about her experience trying to get a driver's license in the great state of New Mexico. First of all, she found out her driver's license was going to expire and she was going on a trip. So she wanted to get it renewed. Now, she's elderly. I mean, very elderly. And she makes an appointment so she doesn't have to wait in line, goes down to the driver's license bureau. The gal at the front desk of the driver's license bureau says, "Do you have all your information?" She goes, "Oh, yeah. I have my previous license and I have one of my utility bills proving my residence, although, you know, I've lived at the same place for like 10 years. And, you know, I got everything I need." And the gal looks at her and goes, "Oh, no, you need much more than that. You need a passport. You need two utility bills proving your address. You need your birth certificate." I'm not making this up. "You need your birth certificate. You need," oh God, the list was like endless. "You need your marriage license." And on and on. I mean, more documents than any normal human being would have, right? Particularly in this lady's case, because she'd been married for decades and decades. Who knows where the marriage license was? And at her age, I mean, you know, you don't keep your birth certificate lying around. Anyway, she was fit to be tied. The lady at the front desk said, "Well, it's not our fault." Of course, it's never the fault of a progressive or a government worker, right? "It's not our fault. The federal government has new regulations." Now, look, folks. I digress. The federal government doesn't have squat to do with driver's license in states. It is strictly state-run. Each state has its own laws, as we're all familiar with. I have listeners in virtually all 50 states, probably all 50 states. And you know that from one state to the next, everybody has different requirements, although nothing like this poor older gal experienced. So, you know, my surmise, another little sidelight, is that they're saying this, they're doing it on purpose to make people pissed off. And they're saying it on purpose because New Mexico, which is a blue state, and the particular town in which she's in is a very blue town, they're saying it so that people get pissed off at the federal government, i.e. Trump. But I digress. So she goes back to her place. She rounds up everything she can, another utility bill, her passport, and a couple of other sundries that she could lay her hands on easy, calls for another appointment because she didn't want to wait in line, goes down 2 hours later, and the lady at the front desk passes her to the next higher-level bureaucrat who looks at all her stuff. Now there's like 20 pages of stuff. right? You got the previous driver's license, her online test or whatever she had to do, the utility bills, you know, the whole nine yards. And she goes, I'm so sorry, but this, we can't issue your renewal. This is a renewal, remember. This is not a new driver's license. This is not a new person. We can't issue a renewal of your driver's license, which had not expired yet, right? Hadn't even expired yet. We can't issue a renewal of the driver's license until we have your marriage certificate and your birth certificate. Well, anyway, this lady, who I get is very nice but can get forceful, she went crazy. So the next upper tier bureaucrat calls in the manager of the driver's license bureau. And he comes in, he goes, oh, I'm so sorry, but we just can't do this. And, you know, we have to have the marriage certificate. We have to have the birth certificate. I mean, folks, I don't know where my marriage certificate is. I do happen to know where my birth certificate is, but that's only because I keep it in my passport. Otherwise, I'd have no clue where it was. Anyway, to make a long story short, this older gal absolutely becomes incensed. And she stands up, and I guess not yelling, but talking in a very loud tone in front of the other 25 quote-unquote patrons at the driver's license bureau who had not called for an appointment, were instead sitting there twiddling their thumbs while the bureaucrats were doing their bureaucracy with an old lady who's trying to renew her license who hadn't expired. You know, I mean, good Lord. All you got to do, she sent me a picture. All you got to do is look at her. And, I mean, you'd give her a license just looking at her. Anyway, to make a long story short, she raised such a stink that he brought her in another room and said, okay, but don't tell anybody. I'm going to do this for you. Although I really shouldn't, because you're supposed to have your marriage license and your birth certificate. Anyway, to make a long story short, she got her license. This is after two trips. Think about this. Two trips to the driver's license bureau. Probably, you know, half an hour driving each way. Then a half an hour to an hour at the driver's license bureau twice. This is the time of the gal at the front desk. Your taxpayer dollars, folks. Your taxpayer dollars. Spending 10 minutes explaining these ridiculous things and then lying about the fact it was a federal requirement. This is 20 minutes with the second tier bureaucrat, basically reiterating the same mindless bureaucratic nonsense. And this is another 20 minutes, or whatever, half an hour, with the top honcho at the driver's license bureau trying to get it sorted out. And then, of course, the half an hour of doing this test, the eye test, and whatever it was when she finally got the license. This is something like 6 man-hours of Americans' time. 3 of the 4 Americans on the payroll dole of the taxpayer to issue a driver's license to a woman who's trying to renew in advance, who's lived in the same place for almost a decade. I want you to think about that. Now, multiply that by all the interactions that we all have, you know, 350 million Americans around the country with bureaucrats, whether private or government, every day. You don't think this is a problem? This is a problem. Now, for my next story. Ooh. This next story is kind of cool. So, close your eyes. In a time long ago, but not so long ago, and pretend that you have a gentleman who's smarter than a whip, tougher than nails, a great military tactician. He literally drives. He's born on a sugar plantation. He gets an appointment to West Point. He serves with distinction and valor as an officer in the Mexican-American War. He is then the superintendent of West Point for the United States. And then he was conflicted. And he decided to fight for his country. He fought with valor. He won a major, major battle in the Civil War. Major battle. In fact, as I'll get into in more detail here at the conclusion, could have ended the Civil War at that time, but did not. So, what would you think of a gentleman like that, who served in the armed forces, who had that kind of distinguished career, had the on-field successes in a major battle commanding an army, was decorated for valor, served as the superintendent of West Point. This is a true story, folks. True story. And you'll see where it's going here in a second. What would you think of a guy like that? I mean, stand-up dude, right? A stand-up gentleman. Somebody you'd be proud to call a patriot. Proud to call a soldier. Somebody who's worthy of admiration and respect, whether or not you agreed with all his ideas or decisions. Well, this gentleman's name is P.G.T. Beauregard. General Beauregard. He was the hero of the first battle of Bull Run in the Civil War. He was Confederate. Because, folks, even though the left would like you to think that the Civil War was fought primarily over slavery, and listen, that was a major ingredient. The Civil War was fought primarily over states' rights. Did you know the Constitution gives states the rights to succeed? Yes, it does. And I'm not saying whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm giving you facts. The Confederate states succeeded, as was their rights under the Constitution. They didn't try and change the North. And whatever you may think of slavery, personally I think it's despicable, they didn't try and impose their values on what was then another country, the North, the United States, rather than the Confederate states. Beauregard's home state of Louisiana seceded from the Union and became its own country for a while until it became one of the Confederate States of America, then its own country. And he decided to fight for his home, for his country. And he was motivated by the fact that the North was beating the drums, talking about how they were going to invade and ransack the South. Which, by the way, eventually they did. Remember Sherman's march to the sea, burning everything in his path. Beauregard, I'm going to give you the conclusion of the story now. Beauregard, because of his deep, ceded loyalty to the United States and his conflict, defend his home country, Louisiana and the South, or stay with the United States, for which he had served with distinction in all sorts of really big capacities. I mean, the commandant of West Point and a commanding general in the Mexican-American War are kind of big deals. And he decided out of principle that he would fight for his home country, Louisiana, and then the Confederacy. Because of his love of the United States, at the Battle of Bull Run, when he routed the Union Army, he was just a day or two's march from Washington, D.C., which was virtually undefended because the army that was defending it had just gotten their butts kicked at Bull Run. And Beauregard could have marched the Confederate Army into Washington, D.C., and the war would have been over. The Confederacy would have won. Many people surmise why he did not. It certainly wasn't a lack of tactical genius. He had displayed that many times. It certainly wasn't a misunderstanding or lack of comprehension of the political realities of the time. It certainly wasn't a lack of comprehension of the political or geopolitical realities of the time. This was a man who anguished over whether to stay with the United States Army or defend his home country, which was at that time the Confederacy and Louisiana. So many historians surmise that Beauregard did not press his advantage, did not take Washington, D.C., because of his undying love for the United States. Now, a gentleman like this deserves memory. He deserves his place in history. Whatever you may think of his decision to leave the United States Army and become a commanding general in the Confederacy, he is a part of history. He's a part of American history. He's a part of Confederate history, which was a country for 5 or 6 brief years. And there have been bronze statues and other statuary erected to him and to Robert E. Lee, another great general who followed a path very similar to Beauregard's, by the way, and other Confederate soldiers and heroes. Heroes by any stretch. It doesn't matter. You know, you could be a hero and be an enemy. Where I'm going with this is that the new program of the alt-left, which you don't hear about at all, is that they're trying to take down all the statues, all the reminders of the Confederacy, of the Civil War, of this incredible page in American history. It's another attempt at the revision of history, their omission, distortion, and twisting of the truth of the past. I happen to think it's also a disrespect to heroes, even though the heroes were, for a time, enemies. Virtually all those Confederate heroes served with distinction and valor, and I don't mean the kind that Susan Rice attributes to deserter, that moron that she and Obama traded for 5 Taliban generals, that she lied about on 5 Sunday shows. I mean, true distinction and valor. These were men of courage, conviction, and character. Didn't matter what side of the fence they were on. You know, Rommel, who fought for the Third Reich, the Desert Fox, he was called, who commanded the Panzer divisions for Hitler, in the end, participated in the plot to kill Hitler. But he was brilliant, and he was a hero. George Patton, on our side, brilliant and a hero. And these men of the Confederacy are heroes also. But more importantly, they are pages in the book of history. And he who controls the past, I've said this a million times, he controls the past will dictate the future. The guidepost of the future is the past. One of the things that you need to understand is that the alt-left does not like history. Because if they can... if they can change history, they will be able to influence the future. You know, if you don't know where you've been, it's tough to know where you're going. And the alt-left now is busy waging this strident and violent campaign to take down the statues, force the takedown of any memory of the Civil War or the Confederacy throughout the South. You've heard about the Confederate flag. I don't know what your opinion is. My opinion is it's part of history. It should certainly be lower than the American flag. But, you know, it's part of history. Outside the ranch here, I fly the Gladstone flag. Don't tread on me. The pre-Revolutionary War flag. Should I take that down, too? Because now government is omnipotent and all-controlling and so good for us. And that revolutionary thought is somehow out of date, never existed, should be erased from our historical memory? I think not. So you have in the South, in this particular case, in Louisiana, 700 alt-lefters converging and beseeching both the state capitol and Baton Rouge and several other cities to take down all these monuments. Robert E. Lee's, Beauregard's, you name it. Stonewall Jackson. Jefferson Davis, who was the president, the first and only president of the Confederacy. They have vandalized, hung signs on, tried to destroy these historical memorandums, these footnotes to the pages of American history. It's one of the reasons I write the Threads West series. And yes, I know I'm late on book 4. It's coming. It's coming. But I write it because it is true history. Yes, it's a novel. Yes, the story itself is fictional. But the people lived. Every character in those books, whether it is the Sioux or the Ute or the Chinese or the Spanish or the Europeans or others, those people lived. And the historical events and their applications of knowledge at that historical time is absolute. It's one of the reasons it's won Best Historical Fiction 3 times. I'm not sure any series has ever done that. And I'm hoping when it's done, it's kind of an icon of American history. Anyway, that's the second story for today. Now let me give you a parting thought on that story of P.G.T. Beauregard. If he had marched to Washington, the Confederacy would have won the war. And maybe today, in Washington, D.C., or someplace around the country, there would be people clamoring to take down all the statues and memorabilia and historical markers of Abraham Lincoln. How's that for a little twist, what if, of history? Okay. Now we'll get into the meat and potatoes. Comey. Comey. You know, I will tell you that I was exactly right in my perceptions of Comey. Comey is out for Comey. I mean, he is a chameleon. He's not Democrat, he's not Republican, he's Comeyan. And I don't know if you listened to his testimony yesterday, But here's the basic things that came out of it, factually. Number one, Trump was right. Comey had told him three times he was not the subject of and was not being investigated for Russian collusion. Number two, Comey danced around the issue because he didn't want to give a complete admission. But there was no obstruction of justice. Trump actually asked him to continue the Russian investigation. He did say he hoped that he could see his way to letting Flynn off the hook. One of the things that's been missed by the media, well, one of the many things that have been missed by the media, is the fact that during that testimony, Comey said clearly that Flynn was not being investigated in the Russia collusion matter. I personally think it's his not declaring himself a foreign agent of Turkey, but that's besides the point. It remained to be seen. The key point is the Flynn deal had nothing to do with Russia. The third point is that Comey leaked his so-called memo to himself following that meeting with Trump in January. He leaked it through an associate who's a law professor at Columbia. Do you remember who went to Columbia Law School, folks? Oh, yeah, Barry. Barack Hussein Obama. I'm not saying Barry, baby, was the source of the leak. But isn't it amazing how all these dots connect? There's only 6 degrees of separation, as they say. The next thing that came out of Comey's, so now we know he's a leaker. The next thing that comes out of Comey's deal is that he did not leak that until Trump came out with his tweet about having tapes of their conversations. Well, Comey's a flat-out liar. That leak appeared, you can look it up, folks, that leak appeared in the press the day before Trump's tweet. The day before. Which leads us in many different suppositions. Like, had Trump discussed it before tweeting? Had that discussion been picked up by the intelligence agencies? Had Comey been tipped off in yet another leak? All sorts of interesting things. But the bottom line is that Comey lied. The next thing that comes out of Comey's testimony, which I found remarkable. I want you to think about this. So, Comey said that he didn't bring it up to anybody, his conversation with the president that he created these memos of. He didn't bring it up to anybody because he figured Jeff Sessions would be resigning in a few weeks or recusing himself, actually, from the Russia and other related Trump investigations. If you look at the timeline, folks, this is before the revelation, if you want to call it that, that Sessions met with the Russian ambassador, like every other senator, in the senator's office with two military aides of Sessions of the United States present. So Comey must have known about that meeting before all the foo-foo, before all the fake news foo-foo hit the fan. Now, there's many other permutations of this. I'm not going to go into them. Some of them have been handled by various news agencies. But I do want to draw your attention to the fact that Comey said he always kept notes. But, by the way, nobody has seen the notes yet. Nobody has seen these supposed notes. Of his conversations with Trump, beginning with that meeting. But he never kept notes of his meetings with Barack Obama. He never kept notes of his meetings with Loretta Lynch. He didn't even keep a transcript, listen to this, folks, of his not under oath. When he interviewed Hillary Clinton during the Clinton investigation, and you'll see where I'm going with this in just a moment, Her interview was not conducted under oath, and no transcript was kept. Really? Is that how you do an investigation of like 14 different felonies involving the security of the United States? He then slipped, I think, and said during his testimony that Loretta Lynch had pressured him on the Hillary investigation. That when he was going to go public with it, she specifically commanded him to not use the word investigation, but to use the word matter, which happened to be the exact same word that the Hillary Clinton campaign was using. It's come to light. I've seen it on the back channels. I'm not going to talk about it in any detail because I want to see it verified, and I think it will be over the next week, that there were other occasions that Comey omitted to talk about yesterday where he and Loretta Lynch met. Conveniently, he has no memos of those. Where she gave him instructions and or commands and or very, very, very strong oblique insinuations of how he was to handle the Hillary Clinton matter. Now, my personal opinion is the special prosecutor is going to be getting into all this. And as I have said, since the day he was appointed, the Democrats are going to rue the day they asked for special counsel. Rice, maybe even Obama, Rhodes, John Brennan, all of them, maybe Comey himself, are going to rue the day they asked for special counsel. Mark my words. Which brings us into Comey's leaking, which, by the way, explains some other leaks that came out. I would not be surprised to learn, folks, if Comey was not the source of a number of leaks over the last 6 to 8 months. Now, remember, Comey leaked all sorts of stuff, but he never leaked over the last 6 months that Donald Trump was not the subject of any Russia-related investigation. Although Comey knew that the Democrats were relying on this to interfere with Trump's agenda. I mean, you can draw many inferences from this. I'll let you draw your own. During the course of the discussion yesterday, under oath, Comey blasted the press. He basically said the press didn't know what it was talking about, that most reports, and some in particular, were completely wrong over this alleged, unknown sources, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And as I have said for a year, the death of the press as we know it is nigh. Nobody believes them. And Comey absolutely threw them under the bus yesterday on the great majority of their stories, and particularly their big headline stories about Russia-Trump collusion. I mean, unless you are a dyed-in-the-wool progressive, that 20-25%, maybe not even that much, 15-20% of the country, not a liberal now, but a progressive, I don't even know how you'd waste your time reading the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN or MSNBC, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They flat don't tell you the truth. They don't tell you what's going on. They twist what they tell you. They omit important ingredients to what they tell you. And then they just make stuff up. It truly is fake news. And a press that is so concerned with ideology or with personal animus when it comes to Trump, or both, who throws the American people under the bus in terms of what needs to get done, health care and tax and all sorts of stuff, with knowingly false stuff, fake news, is, as Mr. Trump said, an enemy of the people. A press who reports fairly, good, bad, or indifferent, it is what it is. You know, 2 + 2 = 4, water runs downhill. I'm just a poor old hayseed from Wyoming. A press that reports fairly is the people's greatest ally. And right now, in much of the press, the people have no ally. All right, that's it for Comey. And but although I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of him. Did you know, here's a little bullet point for you, that there's a bunch of Democrats, mostly Bernie Sanders Democrats, suing the DNC for all sorts of nasty stuff like fraud and collusion, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to tell you more about that in the coming weeks. And did you know, and boy, this all ties right into Comey and the whole nine yards, that Hillary is once again under investigation. Now, my personal opinion is that special counsel is going to be looking at her foundation. He's going to be looking at her classified information stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But what she's under investigation for now is pay to play again. And the pay to play, folks, is she threatened. Now, think about Barack Obama using the IRS to shut down conservative groups and then lying about it in the O'Reilly interview before the Super Bowl, no less. Hillary is under investigation for threatening Bangladesh with IRS audits of all their important businessmen over here if Bangladesh did not lay off a prosecution of one of Hillary's big foreign campaign donors. First of all, foreign campaign donors is illegal, but putting that as it may. The gentleman from Bangladesh, follow me on this, because it's going to get into the meat of this show, which is the alt-left and Islamists, their allies, and their spin. The gentleman from Bangladesh is reportedly Muslim, that she wants to get off the hook. Now, you know that her longtime right-hand gal was Uma Abedin. You've heard the name, I've talked about her, etc. Let me just refresh you a little bit on who Uma Abedin is. Uma Abedin worked at the Muslim journal that opposed women's rights. She was assistant editor. Her mother is and still is, was and still is, the senior editor. For a decade, Uma Abedin edited this radical Muslim publication, which opposed women's rights, blamed the U.S. for 9/11, and promoted Sharia law. Hillary Clinton went to a conference in Beijing in 1995, the UN Women's Conference. And she said, women's rights are human rights, blah, 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 blah. After that quote-unquote historic and transformational unquote event, Uma Abedin, while working for Clinton, remember she started as an intern in Bill Clinton's White House, Uma Abedin published a series of articles along with her mother in Saudi journals which took apart Clinton's feminist, if you want to call it that, platform, piece by piece. This was done as in Uma Abedin's position as the assistant editor of the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs, working under her mom. The headlines were, Women's Rights Are Islamic Rights. This is a 1996 article. The journal, by the way, of her mother, was founded and funded by the former head of the Muslim World League, which is an offshoot, folks. It is the spawn of the Muslim Brotherhood. You'll like one. I'm going to give you ladies a quote out of this. This is, if you voted for Hillary Clinton, I want you to think about this. Quote, pushing mothers out into the open labor market is a clear demonstration of a lack of respect of womanhood and motherhood. How do you like that, independent ladies of America? Uma Abedin continued to work for this journal through 2008, folks. What happened to... Oh, that's right. Barry got elected. That's right. She was the assistant editor, by the way, on the 2002 article written by her mother, which said the U.S. was doomed to be attacked on 9/11 because the sanctions it leveled against Iraq and other injustices heaped on the Muslim world. Quote, the spiral of violence having continued unabated worldwide and widely seen to be allowed to continue was building up intense anger and hostility within the pressure cooker that was kept on a vigorous flame while the lid was weighted down with various kinds of injustices and sanctions. It was a time bomb that had to explode, and exploded did on September 11th. Uma Abedin, by the way, is Clinton's longest-serving aide. Uma Abedin is a devout Muslim. She is Saudi-raised. And she has edited books by her mother and been involved in their writing that promotes genital mutilation of Muslim women. In 2010, Uma arranged for then Secretary of State, Hillary, baby, Crooked Hillary, to speak alongside Abedin's mother, everybody wearing hijabs other than Hillary, at an all-girls college in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Part of Clinton's speech at that time, folks, you're going to love this. This is never reported. Quote, Americans have to do a better job of getting past the stereotypes and mischaracterizations of the oppressed Saudi woman. And she assured the audience, all burqa clad, quote, that not all American girls go around in bikini bathing suits. Now, that's a little side note. Much more importantly, this is another huge dot, glowing dot, fluorescent orange dot in this unholy alliance between the left and Islamists, right? If you are a Muslim, you practice your religion peacefully like Jews, Christians, Buddhists, whatever. Hindus, if you're an Islamist, you are a believer in Sharia law, the caliphate, and that there's only one religion, and everyone else is an infidel, which puts them in a low priority position in the Quran. In fact, allows Muslims to, and promotes Muslims to lie to infidels, to kill infidels, to convert infidels by any means necessary. Anyway, The NSA leaker, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, this gal by the name of Reality, 25-year-old gal out of the South, who leaked a false document on top of everything else, ties right into this, as you're going to see in just a moment. The Muslim Brotherhood links to Uma Abedin's mother's journal, and Uma Abedin serving as assistant editor to that journal, ties right into the Muslim Brotherhood being allowed in the State Department, being appointed to the White House by Barry and Valerie, another Muslim. It all ties in, folks. This is the alliance, which none of the press wants to go near. They just don't want to touch it. If you go back into my archives, type in the search bar, Muslim Brotherhood, Muslims in government, Muslims in the White House. I give you the names of the people that were appointed to various positions. And, of course, this all ties into not calling radical Islamic terror, in the case of San Bernardino, in the case of the Pulse nightclub, in the case of Manchester, in the case of London, and I can go on and on and on. Folks who are on the terror watch list, who are clearly jihadis, being allowed to roam free until they commit an act which kills people. And I have said it a million times, the blood of every one of those folks that are killed, particularly in any ISIS-inspired terror act, and I don't care whether it was ISIS-controlled or ISIS-inspired, is blood on the hands of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Ben Rhodes, Susan Rice, and a host of others, John Brennan, because they knew these people were terrorists, and their policies did not allow law enforcement to protect the public to whom they swore an oath. And that includes the poor 500,000 people that have died over in the Middle East, particularly relative to the Syrian war, which I happen to believe Barry Obama fomented and fanned to create the refugee crisis, which is now the invasion of Europe. That's my personal opinion. When I get the facts, and I will, I'll share them with you. Do you remember the two Muslim Brotherhood brothers who were transcribing stuff for the Senate Intel and Armed Services Committee, which was suddenly disappearing and coming out in leaks? Yeah. You know, like those guys. The spying which Obama did on American citizens, Comey never mentioned and he was not questioned on. The unmasking, the surveillance of business people, of judges, including Judge Scalia. You know what my theory is on that. There's a guy by the name of Dennis Montgomery. He's an ex-CIA agent. He was granted limited immunity just in the last 2 weeks. He has 47 discs of evidence related to Comey and Rice's and Jarrett's and Obama's illegal spying, unmasking, and surveillance. Gee, you think Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is going to be looking at that stuff? I think so. But this gets even better, folks. This gets even better. Because that raid I was telling you about in Dearborn, Michigan, this is last week. Not only is that raid designed, this is Uma Abedin's brother, not only is that raid designed to break up terrorist links, but that raid is also designed, it was carried out by the FBI, the New York City Police Department, And one of the outfits, let's see. Yes, prosecutors from the Department of Justice, go Jeff Sessions. New York police detectives. Uba Abedin's brother lived in the 7200 block of Jonathan Street. And ran kind of subsidiary, he kind of ran a subsidiary of the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs. That was his front. Do you know what they were looking for? It turns up. Not only were they looking to break up a terrorist ring, et cetera, but the official said it was a matter of national security. And it's believed that one of the things they were looking for at Uma Abedin's brother's house are Hillary Clinton's missing laptop computers. Remember all that? She lost them. She couldn't find them. Oh, they were destroyed. And Comey said it was okay. And it all ties in, folks. And thumb drives, which have more emails. The agents, we don't know exactly what was taken, exactly what they were looking for. But this is the rumors swirling around all the back channels. And, by the way, rumors that are based on a whole bunch of factual dots. But we do know that those agents that did that raid, by the way, he was arrested, they removed boxes that contained phones, iPad, passports, etc. The target's name, by the way, is Samer, S-A-M-E-R, L. DeBeck. And he was arrested, by the way, quote, on suspicion of material support to a terrorist organization, unquote. He's currently being extradited back to New York. You ain't heard the last of this, folks. You ain't heard the last of this on either the Hillary investigations, which are gearing up again, or the administration, the former administration's ties. And I'm talking about Rice, and I'm talking about Obama and Jarrett and Clinton, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Uma Abedin. Ties to Islamists. Aiding and abetting the enemy. Which brings us to the NSA leaker. Some more dots for you. So what the press has concentrated on with this NSA leaker, some of the press has said, oh, she's a whistleblower and she's patriotic. Okay, well, anybody who leaks national secrets, military secrets, national security secrets, which puts us all in danger and undermines the security of the United States in the face of ongoing war or potential conflict with any other state or non-state entity, is not a patriot. There are channels to go through that true whistleblowers go through. You know one channel? You call your congressman. That's how easy it is. You don't steal the document and give it to the press, particularly a document which now appears to have been, should we say, doctored? Doctor, doctor, I have a document. You need to come operate on it. But here's the best part. So the press is playing this up as she's anti-Trump. You know, the mainstream media is trying to say, oh, you know, this is what she thought. She hated Trump, and this is why she hated Trump, and we agree, and da-da-da. No, 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 no. She was in the Air Force previously, and she was a linguist. And do you know what the languages that she was proficient in, folks? The languages that she happened to be proficient in is Pashto, Farsi, and Dari. Oh, the languages spoken by, oh, a majority of the Mideast. Wow. I wonder what else she has stolen and leaked. I wonder what else she has that she would have liked to have leaked. And I wonder if all the leaks that this lady was involved in, because I guarantee you this wasn't the first one, just kind of like Comey, I wonder if any of those leaks went directly to foreign agents of our Islamist enemies. I wonder. I wonder. All right. Kind of ties that in, does it? Does it not? Does it not? And then we have Susan Rice. I mean, it's like a trifecta. Reality, Hillary, and Susan. And Comey. It's a quadrecta, whatever it's called. Susan Rice goes on the TV. I mean, if I were Susan Rice, I wouldn't go near a camera. Because Susan Rice is under subpoena, as I reported last week, on this unmasking and surveillance thing, along with others. Told you that was going to happen. Susan Rice, shall we say, has had great difficulty with saying anything truthful on TV. Remember Benghazi? Remember Berg Bogdahl? I probably pronounced the name wrong. Bergdahl, right. Thank you. Thank you. Remember Bergdahl? He served with honor and distinction. You know, I mean, this is the guy who's like up for his life on a court martial right now for treason and desertion. Do you remember? Oh, I don't know anything about surveillance or unmasking. And then 2 weeks later, this is just a month ago. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we did do that. I did order this. And oh, yeah. That's Susan Rice. So Susan, baby, she was on ABC's, quote-unquote, This Week show. Let me give you a couple quotes. Remember, this is the woman. Let me put this in perspective for you. 8 to 10 years ago, I don't have the exact year, but within the last decade, we're talking about just 10 years ago, the worldwide deaths from the acts of terrorists, 99.99999% being Islamic, radical Islamic terrorists, was 2,700. Last year, the deaths, remember, this is not people wounded, this is not people affected, just deaths, from radical Islamic terrorism was 33,000 around the planet. Now, last time I checked, that's a 15-fold plus or minus increase over 10 years. 33,000 people a year getting killed by terrorism. And for every person killed, if you go by the attacks in, let's say, just London in the United States, there's 2 to 3. For every person unfortunately killed, there's tragically 2 to 3 people injured, maimed, wounded, whatever. And, of course, all those people have family and friends. So, I mean, you're talking about thousands of people affected. You're talking about multiples of thousands of people wounded. And you're talking about 33,000 people killed last year around the world. I'd say that's a major friggin' problem. And it's on the increase. And the last eight of the last 10 years, folks, was Barry Obama and Susan Rice. I wonder who's responsible for this crap. And that doesn't even count the 500,000 poor souls killed in the Mideast. Or the 6 million people on the move. Or the tens of thousands enslaved in sex camps by ISIS. And ISIS could have been eliminated by Barry Obama before it even germinated. And he ignored the recommendations of his military and his intelligence. You know, when you don't do something, that is as much a decision as doing something. I'll leave it at that. So, Susan, let me give you a couple quotes. Because I don't really need to say anything more. I'll just give you a couple quotes. Quote, there's really no evidence to suggest by banning Muslims or banning Muslims from a particular set of 6 countries. I mean, since when is this? Since when is Trump's executive order a Muslim ban? I mean, it's just unbelievable. That we would make ourselves more safe here at the United States. And that's, I believe, one of the major reasons why the courts thus far have been very skeptical of the travel ban, unquote. It wouldn't be any chance that your boss, Barry Obama, appointed ultra-leftist legislation from the bench judges in the Fourth and Ninth Circuits. Would it, Susan? Here's another quote. Quote, there's a very real risk that by stigmatizing and isolating Muslims from particular countries, and Muslims in general, that we alienate the very communities here in the United States whose cooperation we most need to detect and prevent those homegrown extremists from being able to carry out the attacks. Yeah, okay. Look, I want you to understand that Islamists, radical Muslims, and the alt-left with whom they're in bed with have a playbook. The alt-left has its playbook on politics and protests and all that stuff. You know, we've been over it before. You see it on TV every day. The Islamists have a almost identical playbook on different matters. And in true Alinsky-like cadence, which they learned from their buddies in the alt-left, they spin, confuse, obfuscate, and distract. Whenever you have one of these terrorist attacks, they pretend to condemn it. Remember, the Quran says, it is a blessing to lie to an infidel to achieve the dominance of Allah. I'm paraphrasing. But the Quran says it, folks. It says it. The first thing they do is they cry Islamophobia, right? The left, the Islamists. Let's go, I'm going to use an example here, just one example, because I want you to be able to recognize this crap from both the alt-left and the Islamists when it comes to radical Islam. Let's take a look at the 22-year-old who blew himself up in Manchester, killing women and children at a concert. Wow, what a brave guy. So his father, his name was Salman Abedi, A-B-E-D-I. He was on the radar of the British. When he was a teenager, he filed a complaint against her teacher for being Islamophobic. As a teenager, he expressed support for suicide bombers, and later on in college also. His father was linked to Libyan jihadists and attended a radical mosque at which he read the prayers. His father's name is Ramadan. Wow. His father's name is Ramadan. Here's how Ramadan and the mosque and the press, the alt-left press, tries to spin this Islamophobia, the number one retort in the case of terror. The father starts chastising British security for being aggressive and scaring the neighbors when they raided the house. He said the security forces are doing something against the Libyan community. He accused the police of spreading a false rumor that there were explosives inside the house. Gee, guy just blew himself up. Think there might be explosives inside the house? Oh, well, okay. He claimed that his son did not express any radical ideas or belong to any organizations. In other words, if his son committed a suicide bombing, he had to be driven by something other than being a radical Islamist. And he was driven to it by, of course, society. that nasty society that does this and that and doesn't do this and that. You know, the alt-left chant, right? He glosses over the fact that his son's cousin, who has now been arrested, thank God, has all these social media posts, hostility toward the UK, toward Western civilization, anti-Semitism, who posted that he wished Hitler was alive so the Jews could be burnt in chambers. By the way, there's pictures of all of them together. Yes. So, Ramadan, the leader of the call to prayer at this mosque in Dinsbury, England, who's known to be a radical mosque, fails to mention the time that his son stood up when the imam was professing a moderate viewpoint that condemned ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Ansar al-Sharia in Libya. You forgot to talk about this, that his son stood up and yelled, "Bullocks!" at the imam. Yeah. Number two. It's always the fault of the West. Number one is Islamophobia. Number two is it's always the fault of the West. And boy, are they in lockstep. You know, the Islamophobia lockstep with the alt-left, because in the alt-left's eyes, if you're not alt-left, you're a bigot, you're a racist, you're Islamophobist. You are a misogynist, you are a racist, you are, you know, you're all sorts of, you're a slew of things. So taking a playbook from their allies, with whom they're joined at the hip, it's always the fault of the West. If you believe in Sharia, you believe in a caliphate, then you believe that the root of conflict is the West. And it's man-made, un-Islamic systems and societies that are unjust and inevitably oppress Muslims. So even if you condemn suicide bombings, truthfully or untruthfully, anything that any Muslim does, including blowing himself and a bunch of kids' mothers up at a concert, it's not their fault. It all goes back to the West's oppression. It's not the byproduct of Allah's will. It's all the fault of the West. You know, it's kind of like an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. And if I am an alcoholic, then you made me an alcoholic, and it's not my problem. It's the same thing. Same thing. Ramadan, by the way, now asserts that his son was driven by a hidden hand which orchestrated the bombing. What he's really saying is there's the global Zionist conspiracy against Islam drove him to do the bombing. His sister, the bomber's sister, whose name is Jomana, she said, continuing along with number two, it's always the fault of the West, that he was triggered when he saw Muslim children dying everywhere, quote-unquote, dying everywhere. And, quote, he saw the explosives that America drops on children in Syria, and he wanted revenge, unquote. So bottom line is that, and this ties right in with Barack Obama's speech after speech after speech, and read his book, Dreams from My Father. This ties right in with Barack Obama's perception that ISIS, he play-acted at fighting all these people. Because in his heart of heart, he believed they were freedom fighters against the evil West, the colonial powers, as he calls them in his book. And this is what Islamists always do, folks, when they commit, or people in their community commit, atrocities, bombings, etc., terror attacks, stabbings, running people down on a bridge with a car, whatever. They're painted as misguided freedom fighters, struggling for liberation from Western imperialism. I mean, read Barack Obama's book. Listen to his speech in Cairo. Don't take it from me. Listen to him. And this is the exact crap that the father and the sister of this guy that snuffed out 22 women and children. And there's 50 more, and some of them still critical. In the hospital, they'll be affected for life. They probably won't have useful. I mean, it's just outrageous. You want to come play? Come on up to the ranch. We can play. Let me teach you a little bit about the terrain up here. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I'll tell you what pisses me off more than the terrorists is the people who cover for them, which is why I'm telling you about this 1-2-3 that you will see in the case of every single terror attack. Think about Barry friggin' Obama. Treasonous man. Think about him letting our own military families dangle without money or support by calling the obvious terror attack in Fort Hood. 13 service people, men and women killed, another 40 plus or minus injured before he was taken down, several cops. Calling it workplace violence for 5 or 6 years until finally Congress stepped in and said, no, it was terror, so these poor people could get some support. Think about it. Think about it. By the way, you know, one of the things they think in terms of this gross mistreatment by the West of the poor Muslims. Let me give you a poll out of Britain. There was a 216,000 poll of British Muslims who, by the way, have a higher than average sense of belonging to the local area and Britain as a country than many Muslims in many other countries such as France, Spain, Italy, you name it. And British Muslims are also more likely to feel that their parliamentary representative is listening to them than Muslims in other countries. 94% in this poll said they can freely practice a religion. 88% say that Britain is a good place for Muslims to live. However, of the same people polled, only one third, 33%, would report a Muslim suspected of involvement with terrorists in Syria. 25% of those polled support replacing British law with Sharia law. More than half of those polled want to outlaw homosexuality. 33% of those polled would not condemn anyone who violently retaliates against anyone who mocks the Prophet Allah. Wow. Now, we wouldn't want, Susan, we certainly wouldn't want to alienate these people. We certainly wouldn't want to watch these people. Of course not. Number three, this is the third thing that the Islamists will always say when there's a terror attack. The mosque is the solution, not the problem. I've done many shows on this. You type in the word mosque, and I'm sure there will be some shows that pop up. I told you about mosques who get funding from Obama's agricultural department, which were then funneling it to terrorists. I've told you about various mosques that have spawned terrorists in the United States, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Listen to those shows. You'll find them interesting. Salman, remember the father of the bomber, Salman Abidi. His family and two other ISIS recruits worshipped at the Dinsbury Mosque. It's also known, by the way, as the Manchester Islamic Center. It has a long history of extremism, folks. The mosque brought in guest speakers frequently and widely known for advocating the tactics. We're talking about sex slavery. We're talking about the whole nine yards, burning children, crucifying, that advocated the tactics of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. If you go to YouTube and put in the mosque name, I don't know if it's been taken down now, you'll find the videos that still have these guest speakers speaking at the mosque. Salman, remember, he read prayers at the mosque. He's a high-up elder, okay, for lack of better terms. He associated with a radical Libyan cleric, Sadiq al-Guriani. I told you about his son standing up and yelling at the mosque imam when he was the least bit moderate. So many people were upset, including Salman's son, the bomber, at this imam having the temerity to suggest that, you know, we really shouldn't be, you know, Muslim is great, Allah is great, all this stuff is great, but we really shouldn't be doing like the ISIS Al-Qaeda thing. So many people at this mosque were pissed off over the imam saying that, that they signed a petition against the lecture. That's how many people. By the way, that petition, don't you think that would be kind of a list of admitted Sharia, ISIS, anti-British, anti-West, perhaps pro-terrorist folks? Do you think British intelligence got that? Do you think they acted on it? Sidelight there. Then the media, the alt-left media, trying to cover for the mosque, right? Remember, they're linked at the hip. They do this fake news story that Abidi was banned from the mosque. Absolutely friggin' false. Then they did a series of reports that the mosque reported Abidi's, the bomber's, and his father's extremism to authorities. Absolutely fake news false. Fake news false. As false as the nonsense contrived by the press here on the Russian crap and Islamic activities. Then the Telegraph over there, a big paper, reported, quote, a well-placed source at Didsbury Mosque confirmed it had contacted the authorities about Abidi. It turns out these mosques, once again, flat out made up false. Flat made up false. In fact, the mosque just confirmed just last week that they never reported him to the authorities. And the people who are spokesmen for these Islamist groups, whether it's the Muslim Brotherhood or CARE or any of these extremist mosques, I mean, they are masters. You've seen them on TV. One of the trustees of the Didsbury Mosque, his name is Fawzi Hafar. He said, quote, we have a lot to learn. We have to be more conscious. And that the mosque would have to implement proper policies, quote unquote, against extremism. This same mosque trustee then sent out a rattle of anti-Semitic tweets. This is after his spiel to the press, right? Okay. Salmon, the bomber's father, he got into the act with a trustee, and he said, quote, "We do not believe in killing innocents. This is not us." How many times have you heard that crap, including from Barry Obama? So, let's go one step further in that thought. That may be true. He may not believe in killing innocents, but in his set of beliefs as an Islamist, if you are a non-believer, if you are an infidel, you are not innocent. Therefore, following this logic, his son killed non-innocents at that concert because they were non-believers and infidels. Do you understand how they twist these words? How they feel what they feel, think what they think, but mask it while never lying? I mean, he didn't lie. We don't believe in killing innocents. Except the people at the Manchester concert were, by definition in the Quran, for those who want to read it from the Islamist viewpoint, not innocent at all. His son didn't kill any people who were innocent. They were all guilty. Oh, my. Keep your eyes open for that, folks. As terror increases, you're going to see more and more and more and more of it. Now, next week, I got a cool show for you. And I've been putting this together for a while. And I've been kind of teasing it, hinting at it, etc. Number one, we're going to talk about pensions. I've talked a little bit about them in the past, but we're really going to get into it. Because pensions have a $4 trillion shortfall, and if you folks are relying on pensions, you need to know what the scoop is. We're going to talk about states that are going broke, you know, like California. Their legislature they don't have to be part of it, by the way. Their California legislature just passing a single-payer system, you know, like Canada or Britain, just for California, that's going to cost $400 billion, but they have no sources of funds. Delaware, New York, Illinois, which, by the way, is, of all the states, Illinois is, like, tottering. By the way, do you recognize anything about these four states? Oh, yeah, they're blue states! Must be a coincidence. So that is next week's show, along with whatever stuff is sure to bubble to the surface over this coming week. You guys have a terrific weekend, and stay safe. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive, and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.